Welcome to the Wale and Yemi Football Pod.
It's another episode of the Wale and Yemi Football Podcast brought to you by, we're still looking for sponsors. Yeah, so please help us tell prospective sponsors that see, as season is ending, Nigeria's number one football podcast is open to sponsorship opportunities. Well, anyways, welcome guys once again. And it's been a while we served you a new episode. Apologies, but my schedule and Yemi's schedule, let me create an excuse for him, has been very, very crazy.
It's your own schedule, not mine. It's your own. Don't look me.
My schedule has been crazy. Yeah. In fact, right now, I'm not even in Lagos. I'm in my second hometown, that's Ugeli, in Delta State. So, apologies, but we'll ensure that we do better going forward. Once again, welcome, and we are recording this remotely. You know that already. And my name is Olawale Adekun. All right, Yemi, what's popping? How you doing? What did you do this weekend?
Nothing much. Hello, everybody. It's good to be back on this platform. My weekend. So we finished our term at camp on Saturday. I had a wedding. I went for a wedding on the island, you know. So basically, that's what I've done. Yesterday, I was home throughout on Sunday. Didn't go anywhere. I think Sundays now are my recovery day for all the stress of the week. Mm-hmm. So I don't go out at all on Sundays. I'm always at home.
So basically, by the way, it's been a long time. It's been a long time you did a shout out.
I did a shout out. Okay, let me do one shout out now. Shout out to my darling brother, my dear brother, Adetimileyin Adebola Adesoya, who was 40 last week, and we had a party on Wednesday. And shout out to him. I love you to bits. Thank you for all you do. It is a pleasure to call you my brother. Wale, you are not available. If you are available,
at least you invite me.
That you will not come.
At least invite me.
I don't like to waste my invite.
Maybe we can just do a contest. Anybody that wants an invite on the podcast, go on my behalf.
You go on your behalf. Interesting. That's another twist. A potential twist.
Meanwhile, that
reminds me.
Yeah.
T Boogie finally reached out. So we're going to get him a Remo
Sanchez. What's T Boogie?
One of our winners answered my greatest of all time, Nigerian greatest of all time player question correctly. Apparently, he's in Grimsby in England.
Oh,
so I have to find a way to send him his Remo Stars jersey.
Dollars come down.
No, somebody's even going to the UK May, so I'll probably send it to somebody.
Yeah. I mean, if you want it customized, I don't mind. We could probably help him with that as well.
Yeah, so that's left to him, but we'll get it to him. So thank you, T Boogie, for reaching out. He has been asking us that we haven't given him a new episode. So we're here today.
Episode. All right, so big shout out to T Boogie. Hope he attends Grimsby Town's games though. Been a while ahead about them in the English football pyramid though. Yeah, but I know that there used to be a football club in Grimsby called Grimsby Town. So, big shout to them. I think we had somebody write to us from Greece the other time, right?
Oh yes, we had somebody write to us from Greece.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. That's really cool. Do we have fan mails? Maybe we could treat that before we get
to the
business of the day.
Grimsby Town are currently in League Two.
League Two, right? Okay.
Yeah,
League Two. Speak of League Two, the stories about Wrexham once again. Oh, back Wrexham, to back promotions,
yeah, yeah,
now in League One.
Promotions. Yeah, absolutely fantastic story. Fantastic.
Yeah. I think they get promotion alongside Stockport Town. Yeah, Stockport.
Stockport has
down leading, in Ligon as well.
I've been leading for a while, so.
By the way, clubs like Stockport Town reminds me of back in the day. I mean, when I mean back in the day, I'm talking about 15, 18 years ago, when I used to have this comics about the English football, especially not Premier League, not Championship, but teams in League Two, something like that. I think it was Royal Rovers. I can't remember, but basically it's a comic about teams in the League Two, National League, National League South, Altrincham, Grimsby, Stockport. In fact, now that information, a lot of these people where they play pool back then.
Yeah, that's how you get. You know,
you know, we had back then. Yes, we had pool houses then. For the Gen Z, they just don't know about
this. Before the onset of
sports betting, we had pool houses. So with pool houses, they dealt mainly with picking teams that could play, give you draws, right?
Yeah.
And that's why you could find old men who are going to forecast 10 straight draws in the English league. Mm-hmm. You know, so those days, I used to have access to their guide. Yeah, their coupons. I used to have access to that. So through that, I learned about a lot of football clubs in the English football pyramid. There's a club called Solihull Moors. But I knew about Solihull Moors then. But I also now had this comic then. You know, you go see, even then, I knew about Luton. Yeah, I knew about Luton and, you know, likes. Well, I'm happy for Wrexham. Wrexham is a story of dedication. Yeah. It's a story of money as well, man.
Yeah, right. Investment. Yeah.
Yeah. Investment, marketing. You like it or not, Wrexham are one of the biggest sporting entities in America, this is.
Yeah. You know,
Then
good plan coming together.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I remember that when Rob McElhenney and Ryan, what's the name of the other guy?
Ryan Reynolds.
I always forget. Ryan Reynolds. When they bought the club, they didn't get promotion at like the first time of action. If you remember, when they're mature, then they get promotion. The next season they got promotion, and now it's like, yeah. So they are 2 steps away from the Premier League.
Yeah.
And do you see the caliber of players they're attracting? They have Stephen Fletcher.
They'll definitely attract some old timers.
You remember you remember Stephen Fletcher?
Yeah, I know Stephen Fletcher.
They have another guy. They used to have Ben Foster, who retired, you know, with them.
Yeah, that was his retirement plan, exit plan.
Yeah, he retired. Then I think Wrexham got this boy on loan from Arsenal, the goalkeeper, something Okonkwo.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think it was Arthur Okonkwo or something like that. And that boy has been marvelous in goal for them. You know, so dedication, you know, investment, and even the Paul Mullins, their big striker up front, you know, has been phenomenal. I think he's still their top scorer this season. Yeah, old time as well. So, yeah. I'm really happy for them. And I think it's possible that they can get to the championship next season. It's Ligue 1, man.
Yeah,
it's Ligue 1. And I think this even League 2, they didn't start well.
Yeah, but to be totally disrespectful to the teams that have been toiling in Ligue 1 for so long, to think that next time will just come and probably breeze through.
No, they won't. But right now, Wrexham probably have a squad that will go to Ligue 1 and probably finish in the top 4. Because of the investment.
You still have the likes of Bolton, Wigan, Portsmouth, currently in Ligue 1.
Yeah, I understand, but playing in Ligue 1, they've been toiling there for a very long time. But with Wrexham have like what I call an investment handicap on these guys.
Yeah.
Because they're going to pump in more money into that squad. Right now, I think Wrexham I was taking a look at some numbers, and Wrexham are on hand to rake in about £20 million on the job they've done so far in terms of sponsorship here and there. I mean, so if you've got £20 million coming in, you can still buy more players. They are building a new stadium, not building a new stadium, they're just improving their stadium, increasing the capacity as well. They also have what they call like the cup end. Like Liverpool have their cup end. I think Wrexham also have their cup end as well. Yeah. So, but I mean, I think that a lot of people even on this side of the world can take a lot of lesson. Because on our part here, you realize that a lot of people have tried to be Wrexham, but because they don't have a good plan, it has run to the ground. I mean, case in point, I'm already involved in a club called Ugele Rovers, but Van Dreza is the name that everybody mentions these days.
I'm just it fell off completely.
But a lot of people don't know that Van Dreza is not even the poster boy. Do you know who the poster boy is?
Who's the poster boy?
FC Fireba.
Yeah, FC Fireba. And that team is no longer in existence.
Yeah, and this club started well, built a stadium, like privately owned, won the Federation Cup, you know, played in the NPFL, had a partnership with West Ham.
On the continent, had a partnership with West Ham, changed to Claret and Blue at some point.
Yeah, you know, had a foreign manager, a Brazilian manager. I think they also had a couple of Brazilian players as well. No, the template was looking decent.
Yeah,
it was looking decent, and you know, because they didn't have a plan.
Yeah,
and right now the club is defunct.
That's why they could throw money at it, and without having a sustainable.
Then crucially, not putting the right people in place. FC Fireba became a place where, because you are from the eastern part of the country, you had every right to run the club. No. That was what it was looking like. You know, it looked like it was an all ego thing, and because the club is from the east, only the easterners. No, but they got it wrong there. They really got it wrong there. So I'm hoping that new private owners, you know, can take a cue from Wrexham, although I must say Wrexham have plenty of money. Rob McElhenney is currently recording an Apple series now, Mystic Quest. I definitely know how much is going into that or coming from that as well. Ryan Reynolds is an A-list actor in Hollywood. And they also have other investors as well, not just these two guys. So, but big shout out to them though. Big shout out to Rex.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. So, staying with the English football pyramid, let's move it up a bit to the Championship, where nobody wants to gain promotion.
But I'm really rooting for Ipswich, because they are also another story of back-to-back promotions, and you know, it's really nice seeing a young coach, you know, also bring them up. After you know, just 1 year in the Championships, and the way they've gone about their business, you know, the way they've gone about playing some really good stuff, you know, is what's being rewarded with promotion. Especially considering how Leicester started the season and seemed like they were going to run away with it, but somehow Leicester, Leeds, and Ipswich are forming a strong three, just like the Premier League has a strong three. And I think that with the way the Championship works, it will be so unfair for the team that finishes in third, because they have to now go to a playoff. You know, so, but I'm really rooting for Ipswich.
All right, this weekend was very, very was a very funny weekend, because Leicester lost on Friday to Plymouth.
Yeah.
On Saturday, you were hoping that somebody was going to take advantage of that. Leeds go ahead to continue the course of the early fixture. They lose to Blackburn Rovers. Then, in the afternoon, you were expecting Ipswich, who had a difficult one against Middlesbrough, to probably have gotten a win. And they also, I think, could only take a point. you know, from that game. So I think Leicester still keep their spot on the top of the championship. But apparently, I think all three clubs are also suffering from the strain of the long season.
It's a long season, a long, treacherous season in the championship. Yeah. It's not there.
Because, I mean, how do you explain how Leicester had a 10-point gap?
Yeah.
And now it has fizzled out to nothing. Yeah.
Crazy. Ridiculous.
In fact, we're talking about, you know, Leicester approaching a points record, English Championship points record.
At some point, but, yes.
Then, yeah.
Ipswich are top, though.
Yeah, Leicester, I think they're the same number of points.
No, 1 point. Yeah, Leicester 1 point difference. Yeah. Leicester have a game.
Yeah, I think that Leicester game in hand is against Southampton. We're also chasing playoff spots.
Playoff spots, yeah. But, you know, at some point you thought, you're reaching, okay, there are only how many games to go? 3 games to go for, it should mm-hmm. 4 games to go for Leicester. Crazy.
And it's real squeaky, bomb time.
Oh, yes.
Mm.
I feel for well after this talk because that talk doesn't guarantee it. That players doesn't guarantee it. It's a different ball game.
Yeah, it's a different ball game. By the way, for Leeds, last week, I don't know if you got the story or maybe you missed it. Stuart Dallas retired from football.
Yeah.
I think I said it too.
Yeah, it's strong.
Yeah.
Big seller for Leeds and of course Northern Ireland as well. Bit of a surprise. But
how does a player who bears the name Dallas comes from Northern Ireland?
Ah, my brother. Anybody can bear the name. Stephen Ireland. Stephen Ireland, what is it for me? Matt Holland.
No, Stephen Ireland played for. But Stephen Ireland played for Ireland now, Abby.
Matt Holland is not from England.
Matt Holland is from Ireland as well, I think. Not England.
No, Matt Holland is England.
Are you sure?
Or is he Ireland? Yeah, but it's Holland.
Matt Holland is Irish.
But he's not playing for Holland.
But technically, you also know that in the map, or from a political standpoint, Holland is not the name of the country. It's Netherlands.
Netherlands.
Yes, Holland is I can't remember my international relations again, but what
two provinces,
provinces exactly? Yes, yeah. And in the Netherlands, so I think Holland is null and void. All right, so that should do it for the English Championship. I'm keeping my eyes definitely. I really want Leicester too. To gain promotion, yeah, I really want them to. Enzo Maresca
is in their hands. So.
But I think the Premier League also has said that if they gain promotion, they will not deduct points from them.
Okay, they've agreed that now.
Yeah, I think they have. But they won't deduct points.
But Sheffield United, as they're going now, they're going to deduct points from them.
Or more 2 points. They are starting from -2. Starting from -2 straight up.
Oh gosh,
man. All right, so plenty to recap from the Premier League weekend. Crazy Premier League weekend, right? Where you get a feeling that if City go out to win the Premier League this season, they will have won it this weekend.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Although I feel there are still a few bumps, maybe not particularly for City, but
So if you don't see any bumps for Man City, then they win the league.
Yes, they will, but the one bump that is likely is Spurs, because that's the toughest of the games they have, you know, left for the season. I think it's Spurs, the Spurs game, whilst Arsenal and Liverpool also have Spurs, but Arsenal has the tougher running because they have Spurs, they have Chelsea, and they have United, you know. But then, just like yesterday, where Palace went to Anfield and got a result, we do not know where that potential banana skin could come for City.
So whatever we have learned from this season, I would always go with what Graham Schoenen said a couple of weeks ago. He said he's not going to analyze the running based on who City is playing, who Arsenal is playing, who Liverpool is playing. And I agree with him. Nobody saw Arsenal losing to Villa. Nobody saw Liverpool beating Crystal Palace. In fact,
I saw Arsenal losing to Villa. Would you call it bad belly?
In our running projections, you never have seen Liverpool being beaten by Crystal Palace. You get.
Yes, especially considering that Liverpool lost in midweek to Atalanta.
Yeah. I think that I don't see Spurs as a barrier to whatever City are going to achieve. Why? We've seen Spurs in the last couple of weeks. They've been so inconsistent.
True.
They've gone from playing some good stuff to losing to Newcastle 4-0.
True. But at the same time, you can't take away their quality, the quality that they possess on a good day. You can't take it away. Yes, they are on a bad run at the moment. Same with the way Atalanta too have been on a bad run in Serie A of late. But hey, who would have thought that they'd come to Anfield and get a result? So you really can't, and you don't know what you're going to get with all these teams.
But I want you to know something.
It's called squeaky bum time.
I want you to know. And here's the problem. Man City don't know squeaky bum time. Like Paul Messing said, they just relating. They just keep on piling it up. City have never known what is called squeaky bum time. Because squeaky bum time basically means that it is pressure time. It is time where the stakes are high. But that is exactly when City realize that we'll just
beat you. That's when they thrive.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point there.
Yeah, but
that's when they thrive.
In that, their ability to thrive, right, is shows a high level of elite status, where once you have stolen a match on your opponents, there's no looking back, and that's why it's also important sometimes for a team to be filled with winners, people who know that once they smell blood, there's no coming back. So that is how well oiled this team is. This is a team that's won 3 in a row and looking to win a 4th one. So yes, this period of the season is business, is the business end of the season.
Can we also say they've been fortunate to have an easy and kinder running?
Yeah, but hey, they had their times when they stumbled and their opponents did not make the best of it.
If you're an Arsenal fan, you definitely will feel very, very unhappy and a bit, you feel like there's a lot of bad luck around, because on the back-to-back season where Arsenal have been charged up, where you thought they were going to win the title, they've just come up against the City side. Even the City side is regarded as a City side not really up to speed, not really up to their standards, but yet they're about to go and win the title. So if you're an Arsenal fan right now, you are feeling like, man, looks like we've come up short again, and it is not the fault of ours. Because I tell you something, I think Arsenal have been near faultless this season.
No, I'll tell you why.
Near faultless.
I would even tell you that last season, in terms of their overall numbers, Arsenal were better this point last season, Arsenal had more points. At this point last season, Arsenal had not lost 5 matches. This point last season, and remember, at some point during this season, the front three of Arsenal that were at a very high productive level were not as productive. And we're talking about the period of October to December. They were not at their productive best. Now you're playing a City team who, like we said, Hernandez has not scored as much goals as he did last season, so there's been a decline. They haven't had, I think the brother has finally played only 15 Premier League games this season, if I'm not mistaken. They lost 77 goal contributions with Gundogan, Mahrez, and the brothers in availability. The only times City have lost this season was when Rodri was unavailable.
Hey, Yemi, where I'm going to is, Yemi, where I'm going to is, as you try to, you know, juxtapose between Arsenal's season last year and now, you also have to realize that at this stage, this that you have been emphasizing on, the Premier League doesn't end at this stage. Because I also remember that from this stage henceforth, last season, was when Arsenal started piling in those draws that ruined their season. And we don't know what Arsenal are going to come up with right now. Because I think that we have to see how Arsenal respond to the defeat to Aston Villa. You know, they play Wolves away this midweek away as well. So you have to see how they respond to this before we can start saying, okay, this last season. And last season, they were good until April. This season, we don't know what April has in store. In fact, what we know is that they have started April very well, because they have not lost a game until yesterday. And we just got into mid-April. So the signs are there that Arsenal are going to even have a better April than last season, which definitely will mean that Arsenal will have had a better current season than last, if you get my point. But we're going to see what...
What this league race has taught us is that you cannot have any stumble. You have to be perfect or near perfect all through the season. You cannot afford to have any blips. Why? Because City have shown us that they are vulnerable. They've shown certain periods in the season where they've been vulnerable. And that is the point where teams need to be at their best and be at their best for the stretch of the season. You can't have any blip with the kind of juggernaut and the monster that is Manchester City. And that's why people sometimes want to credit Klopp for sticking there. Why I don't give him the credit, because you need to beat. When you have an opponent that you need to destroy, you need to kill and totally annihilate the opponent that doesn't have any chance to breathe again or come up for water, come up for air.
Did I also put it there that this same Arsenal you are criticizing have beaten City this season?
Interesting, you know, but at the same time, remember, and this is where the thing is always
funny. Beaten City.
I told you on this podcast that those games against teams like City, right, are important to win, but you have to learn to ensure to win those other games. One of those other games is Aston Villa home and away, which Arsenal lost.
Yemi, you have to learn something. In a 38 league season, Yemi, you cannot win every game.
Yes, but we
you cannot
taught,
win every game. But City have not won every game as well.
History has also shown us, Wally.
Yemi, it is.
Wait now, in all the top six, all the top six teams today, I'm sure they do a table of the top 16 today. City are on top of that table. Right?
Yeah,
why? The only team City are beating in that top six is Aston Villa. They lost to Arsenal, drew against Arsenal, drew against Liverpool twice, didn't defeat Spurs. Are you getting it? But what's happening? City are still top of the table. Why?
They are top of the table. Yemi, don't make it look like they are top of the table by a large mile. They're top of the table by 2 points.
Yes,
they're top of the table by 2 points. In fact, I put it to you. Villa, the same Villa you've made a standard that Arsenal have to be winning no matter what. I've also beaten City this season.
Once.
Arsenal. I've beaten Man City this season.
Yeah,
so I think that
Yemi, City took care of business when they had Villa their way.
And Arsenal also have taken care of business. Arsenal have taken care of business because if Arsenal don't make it look like Arsenal are 5 or 8 points behind City. Arsenal are 2 points lagging behind City.
Don't get me wrong.
Now let me put this out. If the standard for this league, if the gold standard is Man City, and they are on 73 points, right? And the team next to them, or the teams next to them, are on 71 points. They are almost gold standard as well. They've only
It is the 2 points between them differentiates gold standard from.
We know that. But we also recognize, but we always give credit to how Liverpool, that season Liverpool, did 98 points, but we're still not able to win the league.
We give credit to that.
Is they did not win. No, just giving
credit
to them. We don't know what
they're doing.
Is that they did not win the league. They came second.
You make a good point. But what we're saying is that you cannot win every game. You cannot. It's only rare. What Leverkusen are about to do in Germany is has not even been done by the almighty Bayern in their history of the Bundesliga. Yes. That is even if they do it. We don't even know if they were still going to do it. You know, so you cannot win every game. And that is what has happened here. Even Arsenal having 71 points and Liverpool have 0 at this stage of the season is credit. City having 73 is also is credit. You look at how many games these three teams have lost.
It's not credit. Yemi,
how many games have City lost?
They've lost
how many have City lost?
Three.
Yes. That's what we're saying. How many have Liverpool lost? How many have Liverpool
lost? Five.
So the margins are slim.
Yeah, but
the margins are slim.
This season is probably a lot tougher because whoever wins the league will finish on 91 points max. If I'm not mistaken,
the margins are slim, and that's why everybody's excited about the fact that I mean we have a 3-0 Swiss, and we'll still see what happens. A lot of people
win. You people give too much credit to competing for the title. Win. You yourself, you have criticized me on this podcast when I said, oh, there was a time Manchester United finished second. And you criticized me about it. Now, stop.
So how many points? How many? You finished second with how many points? Behind the first place.
Stop giving credence to whether you finish behind the first 20 points. Or you finish with 1 point. Bottom line is nobody remembers how many points you finished by.
For this, for the second. For the sake of those who have forgotten.
Yeah.
How many points did United finish behind City that season?
And I'm still telling you, it does not matter. The bottom line is,
tell us now.
And
educate
finish
us
second.
Now.
Finishing second means you finish empty-handed. Don't gaslight
educate
us.
Educate
you
us.
Finish second means you finish. So you lost. You are not different from the team that finished in 16th because you don't have anything.
He finished.
It's the money that you collect that will be different, and that you qualify for the
Champions League. He finished 13 points very much. 13 points.
It's the same thing now. Whether you finish City's first title, they won that title on goals difference. It doesn't change the fact that they won the title. They won the title. Nobody, it's only when you bring it up that people, they actually won that first title on goals difference. No. United finished second on the same points. So, second means you lost. You lost. There's no trophy for finishing second. It's the same way your greatest manager made top four become a trophy. No, you even need to stop it. Snap out of it.
So is that top four not a trophy now? That seems like United are fighting for. Eh?
It's not a trophy. For me, it's not a trophy. It's either you win the league or you forget about it.
It's a trophy to United now. You do anything to even get into top.
You are the ones making noise about. You are the ones who are making noise about competing. Progress. Progress FC. No. You are probably in worse shape.
You hear me?
Because you haven't won the league in 20 years. Let's have won it in 10. There's a difference.
It's not 10. Please don't gaslight us.
United haven't won the league in 10. Okay, 11 years. Right? 11 years.
So please.
Well, Arsenal haven't won it in 20.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's
okay, 20 years. There's a difference between 20 and 11.
No.
9 years. That's the difference. 9 years is
the
difference. 9 years is the difference.
I've told you.
You people finally have to admit that you have got 20 years. And it's 20 years and counting.
And it seems like United have to realize that they have to learn to crawl before they can walk and run. And what I mean, you are crawling right now. Now you're walking. Uh-huh. United walking means trying to get into Europa League places. When you now start running, it's when you get to Champions League. And when you now become a full-grown man, you win
Manchester United are not a team that is just comfortable with just participating in Champions League. When we play Champions League, we want to win. We're not Arsenal, who are just comfortable with just playing Champions League. You know, qualifying for Champions League for the first time in 14 years was such a big achievement to Arsenal. Getting to the quarterfinals for the first time in such a huge achievement. No.
So now that you have started your Champions League exile, you now realize after maybe like 10 years where you don't play Champions League, you realize how great an achievement it is. Hope you
I
know
would
that.
Never count it as a great achievement because of the Champions League. I'm saying when Manchester United plays the Champions League, they play to want to win it.
The last time you played the Champions League, did you play to win it?
Any time Manchester United plays the Champions League final, you play to win it. Whether you get knocked out in the group stage or not, the bottom line is when you enter, you play to win, not play
to participate. The last time you played it, you played it to participate and to disgrace yourself.
Yeah. Shit happens in the season.
Anything happens, nice one. But we will not stoop so low
to be at the point where competing is fine, and you then take competing as a trophy. No way. Not Manchester United.
Anyways, if you want to get back to where Arsenal are right now, you have to follow the template. So I'll send the template over to you if you're ready.
I've told you, you've been gloating on Twitter since yesterday that Leverkusen have delivered on your prediction. 1 out of 5. Let's go Madrid.
That's gone. Arsenal to win the league.
Which one again?
And what else again? Inter to win the league.
You did not predict Inter to win the league. Leave that one.
I said Inter.
So 1 out of 4. You are still 1 out of 4. 25% is failure. It's failure.
I'm still on point with Remo, and I still think Arsenal might win the league. So
okay, so we went to May is not far. We'll just wait for you to stumble at Wolves at the weekend again after you get knocked out on Wednesday by Bayern Munich.
All right, we'll see about that. Now let's talk about Unai Emery, and we call that the tactical masterclass. I don't think it was more of tactical masterclass. It wasn't tactics for me. I think it was the manager now showing it was how he could also get interpersonal with his players and ginger them to reach for higher levels, because what he has done in that game is he's gone into that game without his first choice, you know, central midfielders, Boubacar Kamara and Douglas Luiz. He's put Tielemans and McGinn in unfamiliar positions.
So the reason
Tielemans doesn't play deeper is because the manager feels he doesn't have the physicality. You know, he's always talked about, Unai Emery has talked about it a lot. McGinn prefers to play a bit further up front. Then Rogers, who came in from Middlesbrough, put in a very good performance. Zaniolo also was good, you know, up left as well. And basically, it was the manager bringing them to become a cohesive unit. From a personal point of view, you could see. I mean, they still played Lille. Yeah, of course, it's tactics. I know it's tactics, but they didn't deviate from their system. Their system is still the normal 4-2-2. Up front, you know, they didn't deviate from it, but personnel changed a bit. And this is a side that just beaten Lille in Europe, and the manager comes in, doesn't create any excuse, tells the boys to go give their best again. By the way, hope you know that the French league gave Lille a weekend off.
Yes.
So they didn't play this weekend, and so Villa will have played
Arsenal.
I remember a couple of weeks ago when the press would ask Unai Emery about Champions League, and you keep on saying that there are 7 other teams better than Villa. Hope you remember them. At the point in time when the possibility of Champions League became likely, they asked him again, and he said, okay, we'll wait till day 33, basically saying the week 33. Now, a lot of people didn't know that week 33 was actually Arsenal. Yes. And on week 33, it delivers an emphatic, I won't call it emphatic, because I thought if Arsenal were not wistful in the first half, if Arsenal were convincing in the final third, I thought they got into some good positions. but they didn't shoot in moments where they should have shot. Havertz also couldn't find the killer pass. But the performance from Villa in the second half, I thought, deserved something. And they got it in the two fine-taking goals. But now, I'm coming to you on day 33. They asked him again after the Arsenal game, is Champions League football now possible? And he says, hey, we're now 63 points. We should be able to do it. You get a feeling this weekend was crucial for them after Spurs had also lost scandalously to Newcastle.
Yeah. That was definitely a response to the sports situation. And this is why I always believe that Unai Emery is an elite manager. The way Villa controlled the game, kept possession, in and out of possession, the way they set up, they were very, very well structured, very compact, and they had some really good chances even before they scored. But the Watkins hit the post in the first half. Tielemans hit the post in the second half.
Yeah.
Hit post and bar in the second half. So it was a all round solid performance. Now, the difference of this performance and some other performances is the fact that it was not a defensive performance alone. No, it was an all round performance in defending, in control, in execution, and of course in finishing, in taking your chances when those opportunities came your way in critical moments in the match. We've seen Arsenal respond very late in games, you know, over the last few seasons, especially this season as well. But Villa staying in the game, sometimes you have to realize that football is about moments. They stayed in the game up to the moment when they were able to take the chance that they got to score those two late goals. So I think that it was an exceptional performance for Villa. Whilst Villa are also in the Newcastle situation from last season, where they are obviously ahead of their project, whether we like it or not, it's still something that I think that they would take very kindly to and hope that they can also deliver on, probably winning the Europa Conference League. I think that will crown their season to go along with them qualifying for the Champions League.
All right. And I also must say that, I mean, just at the beginning of this conversation, we're talking about, I think it was more of an interpersonal thing for the manager and the players. But you said it was tactical. And I think that I have to agree with you that I could see some tactical victory as well. Unai Emery also credited the fact that he felt they didn't play too bad against Man City in the loss.
No, they didn't. They were...
Yeah. And he felt that they took one or two things from that City game and brought it back to the Arsenal game. And you could see that in the second half, Arsenal could not lay a finger on them because they controlled the game, you know, especially midfield. They controlled the game, and Arsenal made some, do I call it schoolboy errors, but they could have done better with the first goal. I think Rice could have tracked back better. Emile Smith-Rowe could have gotten a bit aggressive on Ollie Watkins for the second as well. But I also must say that from an Arsenal point of view, I don't think it was really a poor performance from them. I thought Martin Odegaard played very well, especially in the first half. You know, they just lacked the cutting edge. It was just missing. You know, it was missing from them. And you know that sometimes when you ask questions and you don't get answers, there's this mental tiredness you have because you've knocked on the door, and it hasn't opened, and you just get this strength. And yes, what champions do, when that, champions do, is they that, go to the next level.
Yes, and that's where the manager comes in, right? Just look at the changes Villa were able to make. Villa were able to bring on Leon Bailey to good effect, especially considering that Arsenal continued and persisted with Zinchenko. And this is after Arsenal had decided to take off Ben White and bring on Tomiyasu. Ideally, Tomiyasu is the one that covers, that blocks those attacking changes. Tomiyasu is the reaction to attacking changes that teams make against Arsenal. But Arteta had gone ahead to bring on Tomiyasu for Ben White and then couldn't respond, because I think at some point, there are question marks on Kivio, especially after his performance against Bayern in midweek.
Which I think is unfair. How do we start No. How do we start getting question marks on players after just one bad performance? And I think it's a media thing. And it is very
old. It's not a media thing.
The coach
responded by taking him off at halftime against Bayern.
No, but we could also have said here that the coach, because I also think that Arteta, some of his changes suggested he had an eye on Bayern Munich. For example, Martin Odegaard, like I said, best player in the team against Villa, takes him out. On days like that, Odegaard probably plays 90 minutes. But I think that Arteta has got his eyes.
Wait, Wally, let me tell you. There's a level you get to. And you see, this is probably how we become Arteta. He carries himself like an elite manager. He hasn't earned the right to take some.
Are you saying he doesn't have the right to be able to say, okay, I've got Bayern in the next couple of days. I have to take off a few of my best players.
The team that is leading the league in Liverpool lost a few hours before you came on, right? In a game you have a chance to win. A game that is a must-win game for you to go top of the table. You don't take out one of your best players, your leaders. That Champions League, there's no guarantee there. You have
but you have an
advantage because you were top of the table going into that weekend. You're top of the table going into the weekend.
Yeah, I'm with Mikel Arteta here. Because I think Arteta will probably realize. Yeah, I think Arteta probably realizes that. See, even if you get a point against Villa, it is not a bad result. The league, we still have we still have six more games to go. But Bayern is one game. Bayern is one game. But six games, you're also not starting to win everything. You can look at it from both sides. So I think that I'm with the manager here. Like Yoruba would say, Oba ni ko baje. I don't think Arsenal's season can be defined. I don't think it is fair to start wrapping up Arsenal's season after one loss to Villa. Then, like I was saying earlier, I think it's also unfair to wrap up Jakub Kivior's season because of what happened against Bayern. Trust me, Kivior probably comes in against Bayern again. I'm getting good performance.
I assure you, he's not going to start against Bayern.
Remember, in Bavaria, it is not about chaos, it's about control. Despite the fact that there's no away goals, the first thing I have to do at Bayern is not to concede first, is to find an element of control, because I thought that Arsenal in Bayern, in Aston Villa, they allowed the game to get out of hand. You know, things that Pep Guardiola hates, all these 3-3-4-4, yes. He hates it, all these 4-3. Because when you cannot have a grasp of the game, it becomes end-to-end. And things like Arsenal and City, they don't like it end-to-end. They want control. They want to have you on your knees. So I think that Kivior probably starts. If he doesn't start, I think Zinchenko, is also not a bad option. It's just a bad option when you decide that you need to be switched on defensively, as a team. So, but for Liverpool, yeah, let's switch over to Liverpool a bit. What's going on with them? I think, was it last episode or was it on my radio show? I talked about how Liverpool's moment of doom has been pending. It has always been coming. It has been knocking on the door. It is like when they say that Jude Bellingham is over. What's that word we use with this XG? Is over.
He's overcompensating for his XG.
Is over. Yes, he's overperforming in
his XG. He's overperforming his XG.
Yes. At a point in time, the overperformance comes down to his normal performance. He now starts performing to the normal level, and that's what we are seeing with him. He's not scoring week in, week out anymore, because back then he was overperforming. Liverpool were overperforming since about December, when they have been coming back from goals, when they've been conceding goals, when they have not been keeping clean sheets, but they have been winning games. They've been drawing upon the power of Klopp is going at the end of the season, emotional farewell, they've been playing late wins here and there.
and against Atalanta, against Crystal Palace, the old people. And please, for any Liverpool players, there's no problem about the putting the contender for his Atalanta. Then let's go look at that for the game for Atalanta. From Liverpool came out for this match, except for Salah and probably two good fans. Against Crystal Palace, they considered first, considering their team, considering first around you. I think since February, almost every team that's been around you has gone and put in the first team in a different part of against. And this time around, they just could not find it around it. And because they couldn't tell me, it was because once again, why they've been considered early, they have also been wasteful on the other end. Everything caught up with them. Everything caught up with them against Crystal Palace.
I agree that everything caught up with them, and the signs have been ominous since the FA Cup game against Manchester United, where they've had their element of control, they've created tons of chances, but they've refused for some reason to kill off the game. And also, there's been somewhat of a defensive question mark on Liverpool of late, that, you know, even if you're unable to kill off a game, at least try to hold the advantage that you have. But Liverpool have shown very that they're quite vulnerable. But at the same time, you also have to give Palace a lot of credit. I think Palace approached that game with a lot of guts, with a lot of guts, so, and also showing that this Palace is probably a gradual departure from the Palace that we have known in time past.
Having a new
manager and what have you. Just look at the quality of the goal that they scored. Come on. Well, you have to give them credit for being able to even approach the game in that way. Yes, they were given a lot of chances.
It is more of Liverpool's profligacy.
In front of goal. Yeah, that's not in question.
Yes. Than what Crystal Palace did in that game.
No, but you see, at the same time, you have to give teams credit for staying in the game.
Because it's just one-on-one. Darwin Nunes is like every weekend now. We are used to it. Mo Salah. Who else again? I think, is it Avi Elliott? Four big chances. There was one that Nathan Klein, I think, you know, cleared. Yes, four big chances, although it was also said that Crystal Palace could have gone 2-0 up. Their profligacy is well documented. And we thought that fitness would probably help out with that. But against Crystal Palace, it was non-existent. And that's been the bane of their season. Nunes especially. You know, Liverpool fans, their patience with the Uruguay and is even running thin right now. Right. And you look at Salah, you get a feeling that with Salah have not, since post-AFCON, has not been up to speed. Yes, not been at his best, you know, post AFCON. And do you think it's over for them? Title challenge?
I don't think so yet. I still think that the race is still there for the top three to seize. But just that once City see the match on everybody, it's difficult to peg them back. It's easy to pull them back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why a lot of people are like saying, well, This league race is as good as done. Because obviously, whether you like it or not, they have a better and easier running. But strange things can happen, you know. City, in the game against Luton, made a few changes. Foden didn't start, Silva didn't start, Rodri didn't start. They could go ahead and do the same thing in another game against another team and probably bungle it. You know, anything can still happen. I still think there's still a race, you know, for us to enjoy. I don't think it's over yet, but it's just
there are still twists and turns.
There are plenty
of twists and turns. But those twists and turns, unfortunately, I think those twists and turns are still to the benefit of Man City. Now,
here's
where I'm coming from. Arsenal are going to Old Trafford, most likely. They're going to like destroy Manchester United. They still have to play Spurs. They still have to play Spurs, and they still have to play Chelsea. You know, not that these games are not winnable, but these games on a day when these teams come out to play, it might be difficult. Spurs is a derby. Forget that Spurs got whooped 4-0, but it's a derby. The derby has its own spirit. It has its own temperament. And on that day, Arsenal might not just be able to deal with it. So I fear the twists and turns we're going to see are going to be to the benefit of Man City. But we're going to see how it goes. All right, Yemi, let's talk about... gone are the days when we'll start Premier League conversation and we'll start with Manchester United. Those days are gone. I'm not even sure we had those days on this podcast.
Get out. Are you savvy?
You get. We're already used to this from United. Go from the eyes of getting a good result against Liverpool and come to the low of almost losing to Bournemouth. Because I think that if the referees, if the penalty, you know, if VAR doesn't like intervene, then it goes to two.
Yeah, but that's what VAR is there for.
Do you agree with Jamie right now? I think Jamie was stuck. Yeah, I understand. It's fine. I let you go on that. But do you agree with Jamie Redknapp, who feels, he has 2 points from post-United game against Bournemouth. Number one, he feels Bruno Fernandes gets criticized a lot and actually is the only one that cares on the pitch. The number two, Casemiro's legs are gone.
Yeah, Casemiro is gone. He's done. There's no coming back from that. And this is his last season. I don't see any chance here that he'll be at United next season. I don't see how that happens. Bruno... I think Bruno is largely misunderstood. There are different types of captains. You have captains who are quiet, who don't talk much. There are captains who are very vocal, who are aggressive. And then there are captains who put a lot of pressure on themselves because they feel that, you know, a lot is expected of them. And in terms of that, they need to put it out in performances. And when it's not working out, you see them potentially sulking and probably expressing themselves in probably a negative way. So I think Bruno is someone that is likely misunderstood. But whether we like it or not, if a voting goes out today for who United's player of the season is, Bruno will definitely be one of the top names in that conversation. You have to say, you might want to mention Andre Onana. You want to mention Kobbie Mainoo. Mainoo, who's been a revelation so far. So, what is just indicating that a lot of things need to change in the summer. However, I sat back and I was thinking to myself last week, and I was thinking to myself that it's probably United might not actually get rid of Ten Hag for next season. I'm thinking that he has 1 year left on his deal. A sack will get him a compensation of about £15 million. I think United's focus with the Ineos guys might just be, I could be wrong, might just be sorting out the back office. And that's the Jonathan Wilcox and the Nashfords of this world, sorting out that side, building the back room, building the structure for whoever will come and take over eventually. So they might let him ride it out, especially if he finishes the season with an FA Cup, with the FA Cup, if he can win the FA Cup. Some I just feel that might just be his day of execution. And then because he has 1 year left on his deal. Now, I think Casemiro will go. I think that, of course,
Is he out of contract? Is he out of contract?
No, it's not out of contract, but they have to let him go. He will get tickets from somewhere.
But you also know that Casemiro, you know, Casemiro represents what United have been in about a decade. Bad investments.
Oh, yes, without a doubt. And that has to do with the entire football structure that has plagued the team. Bad football structure, bad decision making, bad scouting.
There was a story that the Ineos guys couldn't believe that United went out to shell out $70 million for Casemiro.
Because the guys running the team were completely responsible in focusing on signing Frankie de Jong the entire summer. And when it was now obvious, which everybody had known from the get-go, that this guy was already to leave Barcelona, they ran side to go last minute with desperation to sign a player that's completely different from the player they've been chasing all summer. So that's irresponsibility, that inefficiency is what has plagued Manchester United in the last 11 years.
All right. Away from the Premier League, we don't have plenty of time because I think we thought we were going to wrap this up like minutes ago. I think we got a class by 4 o'clock, 7 minutes now. So I think it's unfair that we are spending about 6 minutes talking about Bayer Leverkusen and what they have done and what they are about to even do, because Bayer Leverkusen are even on the cusp of immortality here. It's something that's never been done in German football history. Win the league unbeaten. In fact, they're about to take it to another level. Go through the season unbeaten if they win a treble. And I think we've discussed that a treble is different from
a treble. This is a different treble.
This is a treble. Not the treble. A treble is what Liverpool also did in 01. UEFA Cup, FA Cup, and the
and Carabao Cup.
No, Carling Cup. It was the Carling Cup then. Was it even the Carling Cup then? No, it was the League Cup.
Whichever one.
01 now. But let's talk about. Let's talk to what Bayer Leverkusen did over the weekend. The job was easy. With Werder Bremen and win the league. With Werder Bremen, I think are going to punish Abicata. You know he plays there now.
Yeah.
The moment he realized he was not in the squad to start the game, he said he walked out of the team.
You know, such a quality player that injuries are probably
lost his way. Injuries derailed him.
Yeah.
But Bayer Leverkusen, we all know how this started. This team were managed by Gerardo Serrano last season. Alonso took over when they were, 17, and here they are winning the Bundesliga title. You know, in Alonso's first full season, right? Of Bayer Leverkusen. But all of this also has been achieved by what a club like United have not been able to do. Sorry, I haven't taken charge of United, but that is
true. No, facts only.
Sorted out the back office or the front office if you want to choose the American style of management here. Simon Rolfes, Xabi Alonso. A lot of people don't know that Simon Rolfes is a former player.
He played for Leverkusen, yeah.
In the Bundesliga. And how Rolfes and convince, Granit Xhaka to be a part of the team. But I want to ask you, what do you think was the most pivotal moment or the cornerstone of Leverkusen's title win? Where do you think, personally for you, you started believing? You know me, I started believing even before. But
I think
for you, at what moment, it wasn't even about believing. At what moment did you start taking notes of what they could be able to do, what they could be able to achieve?
Okay, I think I'll go to the second game against Bayern. I saw that game.
Second game against who?
Against Bayern.
Okay.
The one, it's not 3-0, I got they beat Bayern that game. They played a false nine. They played a back three. They played a player who they signed from Bayern on loan. Stanislas, yeah, they signed him. He played that game, he scored. The way they coped without Victor Boniface and the replacements that they brought, who interestingly didn't have the impact. And I'm talking Brian Iglesias and then the potential return of Patrick.
Sheik was crucial.
That game was a turning point for me because they were just a class apart from Bayern Munich in that game. And I think at that point, I felt, this team are going to get the job done. There's simply no way. And I think that game was probably one of Bayern's worst performances this season. I just know there was no way Bayern was going to get back into the title conversation with the way Bayer Leverkusen know the better of them in that.
I agree with you. Fine point. Because that game ensured that Leverkusen went 5 points, if you remember. But even amongst the guys at Leverkusen, you know, Rolfes also admitted to that. And I think that that was it for me. In as much as I believed, even before kickoff, the game that empowered my belief, guess what? The game came very early in the season and was also Bayern Munich. Best thing. It was the game where Bayern were running away with it at 2-1, very late. And was it Palacios who scored the penalty to make it 2-2?
Yes, Palacios, yes.
It was a draw, but the game was like a victory of sorts for Bayern Leverkusen from a moral point of view and psychological point of view. It showed that they could compete on the same level with Bayern. The belief they left that game with, I think, just empowered them and felt like, hey, Bayern are not invincible after all. Because I think they scored first. No, it was Harry Kane that scored. They equalized, you know, Bayern scored again, and they scored very little with the penalty. And I think that game filled them with a lot of belief. And from that moment, they felt that they could do anything. They felt that they could match Bayern toe-to-toe. And it was that belief that sustained them into the second leg. And they delivered a masterful performance. So, credit to them. And crucially, I think that every bit of their recruitment worked out.
Yeah, every bit of the recruitment was perfect.
Everything worked out.
And then the revitalization of certain players. Robert Andrich is one who showed us a different level that he could reach. He's now a full German international. Jonathan Tah also kind of rediscovering his old form as one of the prime young defenders to look forward to when he first came onto the scene, became integral to what they were doing. Some of the transfers they put in January to rejuvenate the squad. And of course, how much of an influence their fullbacks come wing backs had in this team. I'm talking Grimaldo and Frimpong. And of course,
and Jonas Hoffman.
Jonas Hoffman, who they took from Mönchengladbach, you know. And of course, Florian Wirtz, who, if Alonso was not going to stay another year, I would have said very, very likely that he'll be on his way out of Leverkusen in the summer, especially with, you know, with the Euros coming up for Germany. And of course, Victor Boniface, who was signed for Union Sengale.
Yeah. So Boniface was. It was just like the tip of the iceberg for them. It finished everything for them because all of the creativity they had somebody to be able to finish.
Oh, yes.
And it was just that guy for them. And I like the fact that he's come back from injury and his normal service has returned.
Oh, yes.
But also in his absence, we could see the collectivity at bar. Even Nathan Teller contributed.
Oh, yes.
And I think it's anybody that listens to the podcast, we'll know that we'll talk about the fact that how not going to AFCON was
missing the AFCON was a huge blessing for him. Yes,
it was a blessing disguise for him. And luckily,
I think a lot of Nigerians forget that there's another Nigerian in that battle, isn't it?
And which is Nathan Teller.
Yeah.
Somehow they don't know. And by the way, big shout out, we used to have a Nigerian play back then. Do you remember?
Karibe
Ojigwe, yeah. You know, so I'm sure Karibe will be happy wherever he is. I saw some of the legends too. Mikel Ballack, Stephen Kesslin, I saw one Rudy Vola jersey. Yeah, I saw that as well. And I mean, it gave you memories of when the old tag of Leverkusen stuck on them. And you remember that year, 02. Champions League final, Hampden Park. They finished second. They finished second. Yeah, Klaus Toppmöller.
Lost all three titles.
Yes, sir. Lost to Dortmund in the league, lost to Schalke in the cup, and Real Madrid in the Champions League. And that tag now became something that permeated into football lexicon in Germany. Once you finish second like this, they start calling you Leverkusen. You know. they became.
I think another thing
that was larger than Bayern. But I'm happy that they've been able to crack it, because there were also questions of how Bayern were going to ramp it up towards the later part of the season and they'll stop them. But Bayern have not been able to do that. So credit to Leverkusen. And I was about to mention how all of their plan A for their target did not everything. They never had to revert to plan A.
I think one of the other things that
people they never had to revert to plan A. They got all of their time.
Oh, yes. Well, and I think another thing people don't mention enough has to be the number of assists Boniface himself provided. 8 assists in the league alone. I think for a striker, for a top striker,
that was provided.
Very decent numbers for a top striker.
Yeah. So congrats to them. I think that in German football history, basically, if you want to win the league, you have to beat Bayern. And they did that. You know, in the 20 years, in the last 20 years, Bayern have dominated this league. Every team that has won the league has broken that domination. Be it Werder Bremen, Stuttgart, Dortmund, all of them have had to beat Bayern. And Leverkusen also have been able to, you know, do just that. But the question here is, while everybody has tried to stop Bayern once in a while, they've not been able to build a dynasty.
It's so strong. Yeah.
Yes. Do you think that Leverkusen have it in them?
Well, with Alonso having one more season, I'll definitely be making them favorites. And that's based on whoever it is that Bayern appoints. We don't know who Bayern will appoint for next season. But definitely with the fact that Alonso is with one more season, they will be famous as defending champion. But in terms of a dynasty, I don't see how that happens. Because once Alonso leaves upper season, that this team will be stripped bare. I don't see Victor Boniface being there in two seasons' time. I don't see Florence Wiss remaining there. I don't see Frimpong or Grimaldo remaining there. You know, the Ivorian defender Koshono and Tapsola have been on the lips of a lot of top European clubs as potential defensive reinforcement. So this team will be stripped bare within the next two seasons. And I hope that the structure that they put in place will help them be able to recover and, you know, replace these guys considerably well.
Can they go through the season unbeaten in all competitions?
I think they can. They're in the final of the DFB Pokal. They just need to get that done.
And they play Kaiserslautern.
Yeah, Kaiserslautern, who are in Bundesliga 2 also. Then they have West Ham in the second leg, who they've started the match on 2-0 advantage to take to London. I think they should be able to do the business in London. You know, West Ham always seem to find a way to do well. And Liverpool are, obviously, I think probably almost 70% assured of being out of the way. So they have to be.
That's only my threat, yeah. They
have to be probably 70% chance that they are favorites to win the Europa League as well. So why not? It'd be nice to see happen on that side as well.
So imagine a scenario where Bayer Leverkusen gets his like final of the Europa League, right? And they probably win the league. They've won the league already, but they do it on the league. Now imagine them losing the Europa League in extra time and losing the cup final in extra time. You know, that's the counts as an unbeaten season.
Yes, no. Yeah.
Yeah, but they would have lost those two competitions.
Yeah, but they would have still been unbeaten.
Yeah, but don't you think it takes some gloss off?
It takes something away from it.
Yeah.
Right? But it doesn't blemish the record.
Yeah, it doesn't.
The only thing is the end result is what it destroys. It's the same way Jose Mourinho can tell you to tomorrow that he has not lost an European final, right?
Oh, yes.
Why? Because he hasn't lost the regulation time. The one he lost on penalties. So,
yeah. All right. So, I'm sure the whole of the city of Leverkusen is, since yesterday,
it's celebration mode.
What AI has done to my Instagram. The
algorithm.
The algorithm, man. Any small score like this, man. suggestions by Leverkusen. I don't fire, but I mean, deserve everything. All right, we have to wrap things up soon. I think Inter are just trying to drag us for a bit, probably just take us like a
Once they win the derby, it's done.
So it was deliberate then, running against Cagliari.
They win the derby and they become
champions. The derby, win the 20th. And you know the interesting about that whole derby thing? Actually, Inter and Milan are both on the
20th. Yeah, so Inter win the ground 20.
That's two stars.
Yeah, two stars. They get their second star.
Okay, that's nice. I think we also have the derby in Spain as well next weekend.
Well, we need to round up. Wow.
Okay.
My battery is about to die.
Alright, hope you guys enjoy this episode and we'll see you next time. Ciao, ciao.
Alright guys. Bye guys. Bye.